Hello and welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I'm John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
Today we'll be talking about language bias. We've probably all gotten into an argument about how our chosen technology is better than a coworker's chosen technology, but are any of them actually better? We think it's a more complicated question than that.
Right. So there was an interesting tweet by Dennis Duman a few days ago that read, "There's no command line get versus UI get. There's no var versus explicit type. There's no mouse versus keyboard. There's no event sourcing versus CRUD. There's no microservices versus monoliths. There's no SQL versus NoSQL. Great professionals use the right tool for the right job at the right time." What do you guys think about that?
I like the statement, but I don't know. I've always leaned in the direction of my technology is better than yours, even though I probably shouldn't. So, you know, command line get, because the GUIs are terrible, or at least they have been in the past. Var, because it makes refactoring easier. Prefer keyboard. You know, you got to use mouse for some things, but the keyboard is faster. Once you learn the shortcuts. Event sourcing versus CRUD. Most of my stuff's been simple back-end office applications, so it's almost all CRUD. Microservices versus monoliths. Probably microservices, because monoliths are kind of a pain to deal with. Have to go with SQL. You know, I kind of don't want to, but I have to. Every time that I've tried to use NoSQL, it's been quite the pain, and that's probably because my brain has been infected with relational mapping. So it's really hard to think in the way that I would have to think for a NoSQL database. So every problem that I come up with, also because I'm doing CRUD applications for line of business applications, it's all SQL based. It's all relational.
Yeah. So with that, I wonder if you're just a product of your environment, just based on your experiences in line of business application development. And it seems like, you know, historically you're a .NET developer, also a web developer. So you've got a .NET background because .NET is primarily or at least heavily is utilized in the enterprise. JavaScript frameworks and libraries are utilized in web development. So you've got extensive experience in any number of those.
Well, it could be very well be.
So you're suggesting that Clayton likes those things because he's familiar with them, or suggesting that the problem set that Clayton deals with is commonly that's the best tool for the job? Which is it?
Well, you and I both know that Clayton doesn't like anything. And he can certainly find something he dislikes about any particular language, whether he has experience in it or not.
That's the way my daddy raised me.
But, you know, it may be that his biases or his preferences leaning towards .NET or Angular or React or Knockout or something like that might just be because of familiarity, right? When starting a project or working on enhancing a project, it's easier to reach for tools that you're comfortable with.
That is absolutely true. And, you know, I think everybody gets the who moved my cheese whenever a framework changes, or, you know, they're trying to do a new programming language or something. It's all, this is stupid because it doesn't work the way that I want it to work. And I certainly get that culture shock at first, and some of them stick around forever. So, you know, I don't know how much of it is my bias and how much of it is that what they're doing really is just a dumb idea. I do form opinions and stick with a lot of them. I mean, what about you guys?
So I mean, if I go back to the original tweet, I kind of tend to agree with the statement that great professionals use the right tool for the right job at the right time. I think that that's unequivocally true. The question, I think, you know, kind of contrasting command line Git versus UI Git and each of these different technologies sort of goes beyond that. And the reality is that oftentimes we are discussing this versus that because of the problem space. And so I think there is often a common problem space. And that does, you know, basically because of that problem space, there will be a better technology solution for that problem domain. And then there is a this versus that. So I disagree with that beginning statement. Yeah. I mean, if you remove the problem space, then sure, there's no one is better than the other. But if we're talking about the context of a problem or a problem domain, then there all of a sudden becomes one better than the other. Otherwise, you can't be a great professional to use the right tool because there would never be a right tool for the right job at the right time.
So if you're over SSH and you're forced to use the VI editor, then the mouse is a terrible option.
Right, exactly.
And you're just going to have to kill that session because you're never going to be able to escape. Yeah, and as languages and technologies go, I mean, every language has a reason for existing. It has a purpose. You know, there's no need to bash a particular language, particularly if you're not using it. We've got some guys that I work with that are really into things like Python and Go and Rust, languages that I don't have a lot of experience with. I don't really have an opinion. I know that there are languages in the past that I've formed an early opinion when probably I shouldn't have.
Like VB?
Well, I've worked in VB. I worked in VB6 and VB.net. I've worked in PHP. I've worked in Java. It just so happens that these days I'm primarily doing C# and .NET Core and React on the front end. Again, my preference on dealing with the problem space that I typically deal with, which is also line of business applications, those are going to be my first tools that I reach for.
I think that's pretty reasonable. I guess I would kind of question, I mean, there are different languages, and certainly some have been around for different reasons at different times. That doesn't necessarily mean just because a language was relevant at one time that it necessarily is still relevant and should still be used. Furthermore, it doesn't mean that a language, when created, even if it does something special, I don't necessarily, just because there's a language that exists, doesn't mean that it is a good quality language or a language that has a reason to exist. So there are some languages I feel like that you could definitely, I would say there are pretty difficult to find an appropriate reason for that language to exist where other language wouldn't fill in just as well or better.
At the same time, there's languages like, so there's a particular language that is extremely popular on the web that has a bad rap, not entirely unjustly, but this particular language was effectively an accident. The creator of the language wrote a little script so that they could dynamically update their homepage, like their own personal homepage. And they kept adding to it, and they made it open source, and other people picked it up and really liked it. And so they asked for new features. And so the original creator was like, okay, and made new features. And then eventually the community started adding features, and the language continued to grow and grow and grow. That's PHP. It literally stood for personal homepage, but it was effectively an accidental language. It was never designed. It just kind of happened. And it runs a very large percentage of the public internet, which is crazy.
Somewhere between 70 and 90%.
It's insane. And, you know, it has all kinds of flaws that they're actively working on removing with the newer versions. But, you know, PHP 4 was terrible from a professional standpoint. Like, it would never use that for enterprise, except a lot of people did.
Ash, back to your statement on languages that maybe exist that no longer have relevance or have outlasted their usefulness. How do we go about deciding which languages to choose when determining which problems or determining how to solve a problem? Is it just pick the new and shiny? Is it?
No, I mean, I think that's a really good question. I mean, obviously, the community, I think, has a lot to say about these things. And this is sort of how we suss out languages. But I think, you know, one that comes to my mind is something like VB. I don't really see a reason for it to be around too much. I mean, maybe I just don't have the correct understanding of where it would excel over something else. But I just, like, I don't think it brings it much to the table that C# doesn't run circles around.
Its problem domain has really dropped off. So I could see that.
But at the same time, like, again, maybe that's just me not being familiar with its entire problem domain or things that would, where it would be very beneficial. And there probably are such situations like VB scripting inside of like Office or something like that, some Office applications that is better. But I don't know. I don't know if there's something else out there. But I guess the way that I think that it's good to have these arguments, or the arguments that we're talking about, where you compare one technology to another and you have different people investigating these things, because that is how you are going to suss out what is the best option in this best domain. But then when the community has sort of centralized around something, unless there's a new kid that is bringing some new feature, some new functionality, probably there will be some group of people that says, hey, that seems right for me, and they'll go try it, and then they'll get to be the guinea pig. So, like, it does make sense to go out and try new things or try different technology stacks if that sort of makes sense for you. But at the same time, it doesn't make sense if you're just focused on, especially in the line of business applications that we're doing, it makes more sense to have something that's tried and tested more often than that it is to, like, you know, go with the new shiny.
Yeah, and it's kind of dangerous to pick different technologies. You want to try to avoid doing like resume driven development, saying, you know, I'm picking this because it is new and shiny. You really want to have a use case. You really want to have an understanding of what that language or that technology is used for, and would be beneficial to use to, and what types of problems it is better at solving. In the original tweet, there was a discussion on no microservices versus monoliths. You know, not one isn't better than the other. The problem becomes that microservices has become more of a buzzword, and everyone wants to create microservices without really truly understanding the problem space and how to architect a solution that utilizes microservices. So inevitably, what they end up with is distributed monoliths that are tightly coupled, right?
Well, microservices is just service-oriented architecture 2.0, right? I mean, it's, well, yeah, we turned that one into a buzzword accidentally. So we've created these new words to describe it. People still don't understand it. Darn it, we'll have to start over. It'd be nice if we just taught people as a community, which is really hard to do because any developer that's been around for a while gets shoved into management or gets frustrated with stuff and quits, and, you know, but it'd be nice if we grew the developers to understand just good architecture, because you could build a monolith and build it well with separate packages. So Java would be packages, .NET would be DLLs. You know, other languages have other paradigms for doing stuff, but build it with separate packages so that you could swap things out, and then it doesn't matter whether it's distributed or microservice or monolith or whatever, it's maintainable.
And we all know that change is scary. So when the new shiny shows up on the block, there's going to be people that are really eager and want to rush into utilizing the new shiny package or program or language or framework. But then there's also going to be the people that are a little bit cautious, a little bit more reserved for whatever their own reasons are, whether it's I don't know it and that's scary because I've had that feeling myself, or I've seen this trend before and this too shall pass.
Yeah, that is the thing. Like if you've been developing for 10, 15 years, then you kind of know that nothing is new. We're just recycling old ideas that we forgot about. Like it might be a new idea to somebody, but really they just didn't know that somebody else came up with it 40 years ago. I mean, MVC is from the 70s, but then, you know, somewhere in the mid 2000s, we're like, there's this great new thing called MVC. and the same thing with a bunch of other stuff. I mean, distributed systems, you know, there was in the 50s or 60s or something like that. When one of the IBM presidents or something was like, there will only ever be a need for 10 computers in the world. And he was saying that because he figured that most people would just have a dummy terminal that would connect to one of these master computers and they would do all their processing remotely. And then everybody was like, you know, the home computer became a thing. Everybody's like, oh, that guy was stupid. Guess what? Now, I mean, it's more than 10 computers, but every application is now running on the internet and, you know, they're housed in data warehouses that are, you know, we've got maybe 50 locations in the world where these massive grids of computers are sitting around waiting to do, you know, supercomputing for whoever clicks on the next button. I mean, it's crazy. And most home computers anymore are just dummy terminals. So that's the whole point of the Chromebook, right? It's basically a dummy terminal and it connects to the internet. And then whatever the internet can do, you can do. So change isn't all that scary. It's the people who are coming up with the new ideas that were bad ideas 20 years ago. That's what's scary.
Because we forgot how bad they are?
Yeah, it's like we're, as an industry, we don't learn from the past. So we're doomed to repeat it over and over. And sometimes the things that were a bad idea, like when functional programming was created, it was created because it was very mathy and that sounded great. But the processing power of the day just really couldn't handle it, which is why procedural and object-oriented programming took over. But now, our biggest concern is data mutations and making sure that our applications are as foolproof as they can be. So functional is making resurgence. Now, that one wasn't like a bad idea that has come back around. It was a good idea to start with. It's just, it's processor heavy, so we couldn't do it. But that's one example, and that's from the 60s and the 50s.
I would say that I actually enjoy the way the community is kind of growing and expanding these days. It seems like more and more languages and technologies and leaders in technology are benefiting from the work of their peers. I worked in Java 1, 3, 1, 4, and 5, and ping-ponged back and forth between Java and .NET during those years. And, you know, there was kind of a public rivalry between the Java camp and the .NET camp in those days.
Just kind of?
Yeah. but it seems more that, you know, that both languages are benefiting from that more friendly rivalry these days and making progress together. A lot of the functional concepts out of F Sharp are now being adopted by C Sharp in future versions. So, you know, I think it's becoming more collaborative at this point and less antagonistic the way the community is working together.
Yeah, I think with the communication available through the internet and through the open source communities like GitHub and some of the other ones, I think that the information is making its way around faster. So in the last 5 years, there's been a bunch of new discoveries that were actually from the 60s and 70s that I've read old papers on, but we've rediscovered it. And it's made its way around to a good portion of the developers as opposed to the, you know, 200 people that read those papers back in the day. So that's excellent. But I feel like we're still losing information almost as fast as we're gaining it because people are changing. Or the Ruby community had a bunch of people leave to go and do programming in Python and Go and some of the other ones. And I think a bunch of them went to Rust as well. And they took with them, you know, their knowledge base, which is great for the new communities, but it's bad for the Ruby community because now they're not there. And that kind of thing is happening all over the place. And technologies are being developed so fast that even though the community is growing faster and we're all learning from it and we're experiencing new things, that's great, but we're fracturing quite a bit. And so the knowledge is spread out super thin among the different communities. And it takes a really long time to get some of the information that the Rubyists learn. It's, you know, it takes a while to get that into the C-sharp community. And same thing, you know, all the way around. Like, if you're a Haskell programmer, are you sharing your knowledge with a C-sharp developer or a Java developer? Probably not. You spend all your time on the BBS talking to other Haskell developers.
So I kind of merge some of those two ideas. I kind of wonder, you know, in economics, you have the idea of like monopolies, and you have the idea of open market, where you have low barriers to entry and that sort of thing. And I think that maybe what we're getting is there's a benefit to having the ability to switch technologies. So for projects to be able to pull into, or developers to be able to jump from one technology stack to another technology stack rapidly, because then they don't have to stay on their technology stack. They can move to the one that does make more sense for that situation. And what that means is that other technology stacks can compete and can get better, and then can get a marginal benefit. And then it, even at a marginal benefit, it means maybe it's still worth it to make the jump, right? Because, and so you get people that, so I think like some of those ideas begin to be shared. And because you have people moving and migrating from one technology platform to another technology platform, and you kind of get this like breathing effect of where, you know, people, the whole community or major knowledge bases will migrate into one, and then that'll sort of lift up that technology stack until someone else comes along and goes, hey, I can outdo that, I can do that better. And then they make you know, JavaScript, or maybe they bring Ruby back, and now everyone's like, ah, Ruby, yeah, that's the thing that we need. And so all of that that brain and, you know, trust sort of like migrates back the other direction. And the fact that we have so much flow of communication, so much intercollaboration, so much good documentation, open source, things like that allow for projects to change, for developers to change, and for people to kind of move freely about these open stacks, and then have these discussions and have these arguments one versus the other. But then it ends up being more a collaborative thing, like you were saying, John, where they end up, instead of tearing each other down, they end up actually building each other up, because it's sort of this competitive struggle to be better in as a whole.
Yeah, I wonder if there's some expanding and contracting that happen throughout the years. You know, is it that developers and technologists are expanding into other avenues and exploring and experimenting with new options, and then taking what they've learned and going back to their previous technology choice and bringing those ideas? My other concern is, while I think it is good for the community, it's good for the technologists involved to be sharing these ideas and learning these different paradigms and techniques of various different languages. My other concern is there's a whole world of software out there that continues to be running, that will continue to need to be supported. And my concern is that there's going to be a lot of software out there that isn't being upgraded, that isn't getting the love of new language features, that may be in older versions that you know, don't have the same capabilities and don't have the same workforce that can help support those.
Well, and you know, there are developers that are still working on a mainframe programming COBOL, and that's fine, right? You know, they've been doing that and make a good living doing that, because, you know, there's not a whole lot of them right now. But technology is now growing up way faster. Like, in a couple of years, when you tell somebody that you maintain a JavaScript application, they'll be like, wow, like, are you keeping up with anything? Because it's all WebAssembly now. Like, I can't believe you work on something that old. And it'll be, you know, from like 6 months ago or something. You know, it's like that ability to be able and go back to an older application and be able to work on it is something that I think is going to diminish a lot faster moving forward. You know, like, oh, you're not on the latest service pack? Jeez, how do you even work in there? You know, it's going to be pretty bad soon, if not already.
Yeah, and I've worked with some COBOL folks, and they make a very good living doing some of that stuff. There's absolutely nothing wrong with working in some older languages if you're getting paid well for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, but like, when was the last time that COBOL was taught to somebody? I mean, unless you learned it hands-on at work, it's been a while.
They certainly didn't offer it at my school.
Yeah, and but that's something that you can still do, or at least, you know, up till now you've been able to do. I'm just afraid that with the speed of change lately, that's not something that's going to continue. Like, you're gonna say, oh yeah, I wrote this thing using language or framework of choice a year ago, and now nobody can maintain it, like, at all, because it's completely foreign to everything that we've been doing for the last 9 months. And I don't know about you guys, but I empty my brain of anything that I don't need. So going back and working on, like, if I were to open up a VB application that I wrote 10 years ago, I'm not going to know how to work in it. It's going to take me a little while to figure it out again.
I think it's a bit like riding a bike, though. I mean, quite frankly, I mean, and this has sort of been my philosophy with a lot of these things. I've had to work in a lot of different languages and things that I've not really worked before. And as a consultant, you have to do whatever is put in front of you, whatever needs to happen. And so whether it's Perl that's written in Norwegian, or whether it's, you know, .net written in French, or whether it's, you know, Java, some old JavaScript or archaic PHP, it doesn't really matter what it is. You figure out a way to deal with whatever you need to do today. And some of that might be to say, okay, hey, we this is probably not something we want to continue supporting, and you try to find ways to iterate and make it better. I think that's what is so great about, you know, things that are progressive, like a Vue, which is pretty cool, because you can all of a sudden drop that into something and start redoing a little bit of the front end without having to, you know, do everything. But you know, and I'd love to see more. I think that's a sort of an area of innovation that maybe things like WebAssembly will bring more of that, because you'll be able to start using, it won't really matter what the original language is, and you'll be able to start using older code and just run it through the compiler that's going to pump out WebAssembly or something like that. But I would love to see more technology that helps us migrate from older platforms into whatever we want to go to, or helps make those transitions smoother, simpler, better.
I'm definitely waiting for a resurgence of like super old languages. Well, so WebAssembly, they're writing a spec for WebAssembly as a modern compile target. So I can fully imagine, with the way that the internet works, that someone's going to write a COBOL compiler for WebAssembly. You know, a Fortran or you know, all those old languages. Somebody will definitely write a Smalltalk compiler. I mean, you can go download one right now for normal desktop development. So somebody's going to write all these old languages just for fun, and they'll make it so they compile to WebAssembly, and then you'll be able to write a new web app in VB4 if that's what you want to do, because it will compile to WebAssembly and everything will just work. I think that'll be neat and weird at the same time, but I think it's going to happen. I think so, even if it's just a toy, somebody will do stuff like that, which is one awesome thing to me about the web. But just moving forward, I think it's going to be, except for those kinds of things, it's going to be difficult to work in an older, even an older version of the your language of choice. I think people are going to have to make some decisions pretty soon about the technologies that they do and don't want to learn. You can't just learn it all like you could 15 years ago.
Well, we'd like to hear from you, dear listener. Tell us what you think. What are your particular biases or biases that you see in the community?
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Nash.